This is Viewpoint with attorney and author Chuck Crismeyer. Viewpoint is a one-hour talk show confronting the issues of America's heart and home. And now with today's edition of Viewpoint, here is Chuck Crismeyer.
Another peace signing. Today, another peace signing ceremony at the White House, an historic day for Armenia and Azerbaijan. Well, President Donald Trump yesterday said he would host the leaders of Azerbaijan and Armenia for an official peace signing ceremony at the White House today. These two nations, he said, have been at war for many years, resulting in the death of thousands of people. Many leaders have tried to end the war with no success until now, so he said it will be an historic day for Armenia and Azerbaijan. In July, the leaders of Armenia and Azerbaijan held substantive talks in Abu Dhabi in what amounted to be the most serious direct negotiations yet, in a very fitful process to end almost four decades of conflict. A peace deal could transform the South Caucasus, an energy-producing region neighboring Russia, Europe, Turkey, and Iran, that is crisscrossed by oil and gas pipelines, but riven by closed borders and long-standing ethnic conflicts. Armenia and Azerbaijan, which both won independence from the Soviet Union in 1991, have been at loggerheads since the late 1980s, when Nagorno-Karabakh, an Azerbaijan region that had mostly ethnic Armenian population, broke away from Azerbaijan with support from Armenia. In 2023, Azerbaijan retook Karabakh, prompting about 100,000 ethnic Armenians to flee Armenia. And in effect, my friends, I have long believed that Armenia is like a Gentile Israel. The Armenian people are very much like a Gentile Israel in more ways than one. And so today on Viewpoint, we take a look at the matter of Armenia and what is going on this very day, deemed to be a historic peace agreement. But what's behind the scenes? What about Armenia? What is this country that very few Americans have any cognition of, except if you live in an area where there are many Armenian people, such as in Pasadena, California, where I lived, or in Fresno, California, where I lived, or wherever Armenian people are congregated. You see, Armenian people tend to congregate among themselves very much like Jewish people tend to congregate among themselves. And believe it or not, when I was practicing law in California, I had many Armenian friends and business relationships and so on, so much so that they asked me to speak in their various congregations. That's right. All over Southern California, I was asked to speak to various Armenian congregations, Christian congregations. And of course, I learned a very fancy word. I call it a fancy word because it's not in our American linguistic list. It's the word Odar, which means you're not a stranger. And so I would always address the people telling them, I am no Odar, I'm not a stranger. And I would elicit some sort of a little laugh. But in any event, I am not a stranger to the Armenian community, not a stranger to the Armenian people and the Armenian issue that is arising and has been troubling them for many, many years. So today on Viewpoint, we're going to take a look at this, because if we do not understand the dynamics of what is taking place, it's going to be hard for us to really understand the dynamics of what is taking place in Israel this very day. Benjamin Netanyahu has announced that the security cabinet there in Israel has decided to take over Gaza City. Not the whole of Gaza, but Gaza City. I think it's a step in the direction ultimately of taking over all of Gaza, because without that, there's no way to get rid of Hamas. Well, the reality is the Armenian people are having to deal not with Hamas, but with a Muslim group of people from Azerbaijan. A primarily Muslim state or nation, and they don't much like the fact that Armenia was the first Christian country. Now, that may come as a shock to you. You may have thought that America was the first Christian country, or that the first Christians, well, whoever. In fact, it may even shock the Vatican to know. But in fact, Armenia was the first openly declared Christian country. The year 301 AD, when King Tiridates III declared Christianity the official religion of Armenia, under the guidance of Gregory the Illuminator, should be etched into the collective memory of Christian history, said Didi Logason in an article that came out today in the Christian Post. Over the centuries, Armenia has preserved its Christian identity through conquest, forced conversion, genocide, and geopolitical betrayal. Despite being surrounded by autocratic regimes like Israel and militant ideologies like Israel has to deal with, that contest its very existence, that is, Armenia's very existence, it has remained faithful. Well, the same is true with Israel. You can see, in a sense, then, why Armenia is very much like a Gentile Israel, except Armenia on the Christian side, Israel on the Judaic side. In 2023, the world watched as over 120,000 Christian Armenians were expelled from their ancestral home. It was a brutal campaign of ethnic cleansing by a Muslim-majority Azerbaijan, punctuated by the systematic erasure of Armenian Christian culture. Centuries-old churches were desecrated or destroyed. Cemeteries were bulldozed. Crosses were removed. Icons defaced. Armenian inscriptions erased. Whenever possible, the historic record of Armenian Christianity was obliterated. And even as Armenia contends with these threats, another campaign is underway now. A fringe theory has resurfaced, promoted by voices aligned with the Azerbaijani regime, claiming that the ancient kingdom of Caucasus, Albania, not Armenia, but Albania, was the first Christian nation. There's no serious historical evidence to support the idea that Caucasian Albania adopted Christianity before Armenia. In fact, the Christianization of Albania occurred in the mid to late 4th century, largely facilitated by Armenian missionaries. The Albanian church, which no longer even exists, eventually came under the jurisdiction of the Armenian Apostolic Church. So this revisionist narrative, like what Israel's having to deal with, is just, it's not about history, about the crudest of politics, an effort to delegitimize Armenian identity and erase its ancient presence from the region, especially its Christian presence. We'll be back.
Once upon a time, children could pray and read their Bibles in school. Divorces were practically unknown, as was child abuse. In our once great America, virginity and chastity were popular virtues, and homosexuality was an abomination. So what happened in just one generation? Hi, I'm Chuck Crismeyer, and I urge you to join me daily on Viewpoint, where we discuss the most challenging issues touching our hearts and homes. Could America's moral slide relate to the Fourth Commandment?
Listen to Viewpoint on this radio station or anytime at saveus.org.
Welcome back to Viewpoint. I'm Chuck Crismeyer. Today we're looking at the amazing developments, another peace treaty signed at the White House today between Armenia and Azerbaijan. Armenia, a historic Christian nation, in fact, the very first declared Christian nation in 301 AD, and Azerbaijan, a predominantly Muslim nation. Now, obviously, they're not coming to agreement with regard to matters of faith. It's regard to matters of politics that have resulted in horrific killings, slaughterings, the attempt by Azerbaijan and its Muslim leadership and those camps within it to completely obliterate Armenia and its history and its Christian roots. It has been a horrific situation. I'm looking right now at the map of the region. It's quite fascinating. So if we look at Armenia and the nations that are juxtaposed around it, in the southwest is Turkey, major nation. In the northeast is Azerbaijan. But then again, there's a small area of Azerbaijan that's on the southwest narrow region bordering Iran. So Azerbaijan, therefore, claims both sides of Armenia. You can imagine then the problem that that causes Armenia to face. Just like with Israel, being surrounded by Muslim nations or predominantly Muslim nations. So you have Egypt to the south of Israel. Then you have the so-called, you have Jordan to the east. Then you have the so-called West Bank that's been governed by the Palestinian Authority. That's Judea and Samaria. And you have Gaza, the Gaza Strip, that has been governed by Muslims. Then you have Syria to the northeast, governed by Muslims. And then you have Lebanon to the north, which was formerly a Christian nation that has been largely taken over, especially in the south, by Muslim and a Muslim group called Hezbollah. So Israel has been pressured and threatened and is limited to a very narrow piece of land. The same situation has occurred with Armenia. And as I look at the map, it is fascinating how similar the situation is for Armenia as compared to Israel, to be pressurized at its at one area by a very narrow isthmus over which Azerbaijan governs both sides. Now, the uprising of this is that Azerbaijan claims to own that area, wants to own that area. Armenia says, no, this is our area. Azerbaijan tried to take it over. And, of course, it's led to decades and decades now of nothing but strife and hundreds of thousands of people losing their lives, especially Armenians, who have been forced to flee, 120,000 of them, to flee for their lives. Very similar to what's happened in Israel. Then just to the south of Armenia is Iran. So you can see Turkey, Iran, Azerbaijan, all Muslim nations, serious Muslim nations, profound Muslim nations, and to the north, Georgia, abutting Russia. So you can well understand why this area would be critical. In fact, it's critical for reasons beyond what we've even talked about to this point. Believe it or not, Noah's Ark rested on the mountains of Ararat, which the argument continues to go, historically, are in Armenia, but the Turks claim that it's in Turkey. I'm looking right now. Mount Ararat, it shows its picture in this map in a Encyclopedia of World Atlas. World Atlas Encyclopedia shows Mount Ararat and the mountains of Ararat primarily in Armenia. But Turkey seeks to govern that area. So, once again, it's very much like the Golan Heights in Israel, where Syria claims to own and control the northeastern part of the Golan Heights. Israel claims that the Golan Heights are part of Israel, and so you have constant tension there. A good friend of mine in California, who produced an awful lot of the framing for much of the biblical documents and so on that are in our gallery, in our offices, has made two or three expeditions to Mount Ararat to try to find, locate Noah's Ark. What he met there was Turkish folk who tried to deceive into those who were attempting to find Noah's Ark, deceive them into thinking it was somewhere else, because they don't want American Christians or any Christians to locate Noah's Ark. Where is it? Well, the argument continues. There are those who claim that they have seen it. Others claim that years ago, a military pilot was flying over the region and took some pictures and saw what appeared to be the remains of a monstrous boat, claimed to be Noah's Ark. Well, Noah's Ark has never been truly found, notwithstanding all of the claims to the contrary that gained such sensationalistic coverage. Neither has the Ark of the Covenant been found. I'm wondering whether God, in his wisdom, says, I don't want either one of those arks to be found, because Jesus is the ultimate Ark of the Covenant in his flesh. He was the Ark of the Covenant. And I'm not interested in people worshiping sticks and stones, the residue of an ark, whether it be the Ark of the Covenant, where the presence of God was reputed to be housed, so to speak, or whether it be in Noah's Ark, where God delivered the peoples of the planet from a flood. God is not interested and does not live in temples made with hands. Neither is he interested in any more idolatrous findings to divert people's attention. Some may say, well, it would prove what the Bible actually says. Well, if the evidence that you have seen so far didn't prove that, I'm not convinced much else will. Just my viewpoint. And so I appreciate your listening to that for whatever it's worth. Okay, now we're going to go back and take a further look at Armenia. This is very important. The Armenian people, in many respects, because I have known so many of them and worked with them in different ways, have been dear friends of mine. One of them, actually, his name was Steve Lazarian. That means son of Lazar. He actually built the first headquarters for Focus on the Family in Arcadia, California. Steve Lazarian. He was an electrical engineer, and he had a very significant business that he built. So the Armenian people are known for their business acumen. They really are known for their business acumen, much like the Jewish people have been known. So when I say they're like a Gentile Israel or Gentile Jews, there's a very real similarity between them. You can argue, you can make whatever argument you want, but that's my estimation of the matter, having been with them, known them, and participated with them in so many, many different ways. Also, Steve Lazarian became the was on the board of one of the largest Christian ministries in the world, World Vision. Also, Steve Lazarian, when he retired, so to speak, from running his company, decided he was going to invest himself in trying to launch Christian radio in Armenia. And so he spent much of his latter days, the past 20 years of his life before he passed, in seeking to establish Christian radio in Armenia. I was with him in many different situations in which he was making those efforts, and would continually meet him at the National Religious Broadcasters Convention, and we just had a dear friendship. So, the links are strong, and the respect is great. It was an Armenian gentleman, an architect, who also facilitated my being able to speak in many different areas of Southern California. He, having heard me at the the Christian Businessmen's Committee, where these Armenian fellows were prominent, he said, "I want you to speak at the various congregations that I'm aware of, the Armenian congregations." So we did throughout Southern California. So there's a lot of connection there that is very meaningful to me. So what about this effort to remove Christianity, to erase Christianity from Armenia? One article says, Azerbaijan seeks to silence Christian group at the UN. Well, what does that look like? Azerbaijan has filed a formal complaint with the United Nations Committee on NGOs against Christian Solidarity International, a Switzerland-based human rights group with status, over its advocacy for Armenian Christians displaced from Nagorno-Karabakh, which is that narrow isthmus of Armenia claimed by Azerbaijan. The committee is scheduled, or was scheduled, to discuss the complaint today, calling the action an attempt to silence the Christian group. You see, this is right up front today. We try to deal with things that are right up front and important for us as Christians in this country to know about and perhaps respond to as we can, as the Lord makes possible our responses. Not only were they discussing this complaint, calling the action an attempt to silence the Christian group, but have also called the safe return of Armenians and raised alarm about the conditions of what it describes as Armenian hostages in Baku. The 23 detainees, including former high-ranking officials, are allegedly being tried behind closed doors by Azerbaijan without access to legal counsel. So, again, a very similar situation to what is happening and has been happening with Hamas there in Israel. So what is the truth about Armenia and this campaign to erase Christianity? What's the truth about that? Well, Didi Logason has written a piece that came out in the Christian Post today. She said, "Later this month, I will travel to Armenia as part of a delegation of American Christian leaders. We're going to visit an ancient Christian civilization that is right now under assault." Under assault. A Christian civilization under assault. And many who have heard me talk about persecution just don't seem to get it. Here's an entire nation being persecuted by Muslims for their faith. We'll be back.
There is so much more about Chuck Chrismeyer and Save America Ministries
on our website, saveus.org. For example, under the marriage section, God has marriage on his mind. Chuck has some great resources to strengthen your marriage. First off, a fact sheet on the state of the marital union, a fact sheet on the state of ministry, marriage, and morals. SaveUS.org. Marriage, divorce, and remarriage. What does the Bible really teach about this? Find all of this at SaveUS.org. Also, a letter to pastors, the Hosea Project, SaveUS.org, and many more resources to strengthen your marriage. It's all on Chuck's website, SaveUS.org. Again, you can listen to Chuck's Viewpoint broadcast live and archived. Save America Ministries website at SaveUS.org.
In this section of the program today, we're going to take a look, a further look at the depth of the history of Armenia, which will help us to understand why this small, relatively small Christian nation, it's not nearly as small as Israel, but Israel then is not nearly as large as what the Bible declares it to be. So it's probably about the size of the biblical description of the meets and bounds of Israel. But we're going to take a look at the Armenian Republic in the South Caucasus region. Its capital is called Yerevan, and it is a rugged mountainous republic. The highest peak is Mount Ararat, 13,420 feet. Armenia has severe winters and cool summers, but the total yearly rainfall is generally low, between 8 and 30 inches. The lowest land is in the northeast and northwest, where Yerevan, the capital, is situated. It has many fast-flowing rivers which have cut deep gorges in the plateau. The major river is the Arax. The largest lake is Lake Sivan, containing 90% of Armenia's standing water. So, that gives just a little bit of geopolitical, or the layout there of Armenia. But let's talk a little bit more about the truth about Armenia and the campaign to erase Christianity. This writer, who is on her way to Armenia, said it is a shame that so many Christians in the United States do not know that Armenia was the first country to declare Christianity as its official religion and has remained a Christian nation to this day. That date, by the way, was 301 A.D. 301 A.D. Now, let's put that in context. The closest thing that we can come to understanding when Christianity made its way into Russia came via Ukraine in 988 AD. So 690 some years after Armenia declared itself to be a Christian nation came Ukraine. When their leader declared Ukraine to be a Christian nation. That was before Russia ever came into the picture. It was only after the hordes came and enveloped Ukraine and began to destroy that Russia came into the picture and that the shift began to take place, or at least the Christian movement began to come into Russia. And that would be after 1000 AD. So, yes, those are very ancient nations, but not nearly so ancient as Armenia. 301 AD. So let's go back now and take a look at what's happening. Over the centuries, Armenia has preserved its Christian identity through conquest, forced conversion, genocide, and geopolitical betrayal. Despite being surrounded by autocratic regimes, that is, dictators, and militant ideologies, that is, Islam, that contest its very existence, it has remained faithful, notwithstanding all of that. Now, we're going to take a look at what that really has looked like historically. Historically, Armenia has gone through, in many respects, the same kind of genocidal action or hatred that Israel has gone through. It is pretty amazing, in my opinion. And for those who are just tuning in, it is this very day that Donald Trump has joined with the leaders of Armenia and Azerbaijan for a historic peace agreement at the White House. This is a very big day historically. It may not be on the radar of most Americans or most Christians, first of all, because we're basically ignorant of world history, basically ignorant even of Christian history, and basically ignorant of the rest of the world because we think the world consists of the United States of America. We're a very self-oriented people, hyper-individualistic. The Armenians are not like that. They're a family-oriented people, just like the Jewish people are family-oriented people. So, let's take a further look at some details concerning Armenia. Armenia was an advanced ancient kingdom, considered to be one of the original sites of iron and bronze smelting. A nation was established in the 6th century BC, and Alexander, that was before Christ, and Alexander the Great expelled the Persians in 330 BC. In 69 BC, Armenia was incorporated into the Roman Empire. In AD 303, Armenia became the first country to adopt Christianity as its state religion. Now, that's in 303. Some say it was 301. Whenever it was, it was. It was the first country to adopt Christianity as its state or national religion. From 886 to 1046 AD, Armenia was an independent kingdom. From the 11th to the 15th century, the Mongols were the greatest power of the region. Not only did they take over Armenia, but they took over Ukraine and much of Russia. By the 16th century, Armenia was controlled by the Ottoman Empire. Notice how the very same situations that occurred with Israel historically have occurred with Armenia. The Ottoman Empire controlled Israel for 4 centuries, or was it 5 now? Despite religious discrimination, the Armenians generally prospered under Turkish rule. In 1828, Russia acquired Persian Armenia, and with promises of religious toleration, many Armenians moved into the Russian-controlled area. In Turkish Armenia, nationalistic movements were encouraged by British promises of protection. The Turkish response was uncompromising, and it is estimated that 200,000 Armenians were killed in 1896 alone. Now, this, what we're about to look at right now, is what is called the Armenian Genocide. You might have heard this term, the Armenian Genocide, but you need to know this term. In 1896 alone, 200,000 Armenians were killed by the Turks. In the Russian sector, a process of Russification was enforced. During World War I, Armenia was the battleground for the Turkish and Russian armies. Armenians were accused of aiding the Russians, and Turkish atrocities intensified. Over 600,000 Armenians were killed by Turkish troops, and 1.75 million were deported to Syria and Palestine. Are you listening? This puts what happened to Israel, it far exceeds anything that happened to Israel. Now, I'm not suggesting that we should look at what happened to Armenia and disregard what happened to Israel. No. It's the same situation, the same kind of motivation. In 1918, Russian Armenia became the Armenian Autonomous Republic. The western part remained part of Turkey, and the northwest part of Iran. In 1922, Armenia, Azerbaijan, and Georgia were federated to form the Transcaucasian Soviet Socialist Republic, one of the four original republics of the Soviet Union. In 1936, Armenia became a separate republic. Earthquakes in 1984 and 1988 destroyed many cities, killed more than 80,000 people. In 1988, war broke out between Armenia and Azerbaijan over the Nagorno-Karabakh, an Armenian enclave in Azerbaijan. In 1990, the Armenian parliament voted to break from the Soviet Union, and in 1991 joined the newly established Commonwealth of Independent States. In 1992, Armenia invaded Azerbaijan and occupied that Nagorno-Karabakh region. In 1994, an uneasy ceasefire left Armenia in control of about 20% of Azerbaijan. So, that gives us a picture of much of the history of this country, Armenia. And now, apparently, our president, Donald J. Trump, has determined that that region was worthy of attention, his attention. And so has helped to facilitate that which has escaped many, many others trying to deal with reconciling Armenia and Azerbaijan. Armenia, the Christian history nation, Azerbaijan, a Muslim nation. So that gives us the bigger picture. What's going to happen from there? Well, Armenia, the Armenian people, are going to get a breath of fresh air, a certain breath of fresh air. They're getting a little bit of relief, just as Israel gets a little bit of relief, until the nations start surrounding again and start accusing, and the thing goes to the United Nations, and it starts all over again. Just as the world doesn't much like the Jews of Israel, the world doesn't much like the Christians of Armenia or any other country. We'll be back.
Have you ever considered what the early church was like? Many people are developing a heart longing for greater fulfillment in our practices as Christians. A recent study showed 53,000 people a week are leaving the back door of America's churches in frustration. What is going on? Why has there not been even a 1% gain among followers of Christ in the last 25 years? Could it be that God is seeking to restore first century Christianity for the 21st century? Jesus said, "I'll build my church." Is Christ by His Spirit stirring to prepare the church for the 21st century? The early church prayed together and broke bread from house to house. They were family, and it was said by all who observed, "Behold how they love one another." Incredible.
But the same can be found right now. Go to saveus.org and click Sell Church. We can revive first century Christianity for the 21st century.
It's about people, not programs. It's about a body, not a building.
That's saveus.org. Click Sell Church.
The area of the world called called Armenia, apparently was significant in the mind and heart of the God of history, because it was on the mountains of Ararat, right there on the border between Turkey and Armenia, that Noah's ark came to rest after the flood. As you know, the Old Testament patriarch was the only person that God found righteous enough to be chosen by God to survive with his family the destruction of the flood. We find that the whole account in Genesis 6 to 9. So Noah, by command of God, built an ark. He spent 100 years building that ark with his sons and obviously hired people in that area to assist, who obviously did not believe in what he was doing, but they got the benefit of making some money by helping to build the boat and then turn around with their neighbors and mocked what was being done. So Noah built the ark to carry and shelter himself, all his family, and selected animals and birds to protect the future of creation. Noah and his sons and their wives were the ancestors, your ancestors and mine, the ancestors of the human race after the flood. So we can say that we trace back to Adam, which is true, because Noah is traced back to Adam. But the reality is that definitely we all trace back to Noah. Noah was found righteous in his generation, one that feared God, righteous in his generation. And the question is whether you and I would be found righteous in our generation, like Noah. And if God would to, again, bring judgment upon the earth or any portion of it, he said he would never again destroy the earth with a flood, but he will destroy it with fire. The Bible is clear about that. The Apostle Peter reinforces that understanding. Seriously, that the earth will be destroyed and remodeled by fire. So in preparation for that, would the Lord find you or me righteous in our generation to, shall we say, build an ark? In other words, to create a place of safety, spiritual safety, for those in our sphere of influence. Because that's really the issue. The Gaither Vocal Band played, or they sang a song years ago called Build an Ark. Save your sons and your daughters, build an ark. What would that look like? We've been encouraging people for 30 years through this radio program to build an ark, to save your sons and your daughters, to really conduct our lives in such a way that our influence and our message of salvation and of righteousness and of holiness would so impact those in our sphere of influence, starting in our homes, that many would be saved from the judgment to come. So that would not rest on the mountains of Ararat, as did Noah's ark, but it is going to rest on the mountain of God, because God chose the holy mountain, the Temple Mount, to be his holy hill, his holy mountain. That's why the world wants to control it. And if you don't have my book, King of the Mountain, The Eternal Epic and End-Time Battle, you don't comprehend the future of that and where it ends up. Because it ends up with you and with me. It really does. God is not going to build a boat to set on the Temple Mount. There may be a rebuilt temple, but again, God doesn't live in temples made with hands. We know that. So where does he live? He lives, if at all, in the temple of your heart. The problem is that most people's temple, their hearts are not capable, they're not ready to receive the presence of the Lord. Because God cannot be present where there's unrighteousness and lack of holiness, and without holiness, no man will ever see the Lord. That's what Hebrews chapter 12 tells us. We don't really believe that much these days in our churches. Our pastors don't tell us that. They just say, well, if you once confess Christ as your Savior, you're in like Flint. Don't worry about it. You can live however you want. Nothing could be further from the truth. It's blasphemy to say that. Totally contrary to the whole spirit of the word, will, and ways of God from Genesis chapter 1 to Revelation 22. Oh, you can find some individual scriptures to help proof text what you're saying, but you cannot justify it in terms of the whole of Scripture. It's impossible. God calls every one of us to live a righteous and holy life. And he looked for a man. He looked for a man at that time in the midst of a wicked and perverse world where violence was covering the earth and gross darkness the people. And he could only find one. His name was Noah. Righteous in his generation. Not perfect, but righteous in his generation. Would he find you today? Not on the basis of some confession of faith, but on the basis of your righteous life. Not because you can earn your salvation by righteous living. You prove your salvation by righteous living. As James said, the brother of Jesus, don't tell me about your great faith. You show me your faith by your works, without your works, and I'll show you my faith by my works, because faith without works, or alleged faith without works, or the proof of it, is dead. Nothing being alone. Martin Luther didn't like those words. He wanted that book to be cut out of the Bible because he struggled with the idea that we needed to live righteous lives. He was so enraptured with the idea of justification by faith, which is true, by the way, but he ignored the rest of the scripture. So he said, so, you know what? Let's just sin the more that grace may more abound. Really? That's not biblical. So we dare not revere Martin Luther that much. We can be thankful that he discovered and came alive with the idea that just shall live by faith. But then again, that wasn't a New Testament concept. That was an Old Testament concept and came right out of Habakkuk 2:4. Just for your information. So, going back to Armenia. You see, the nations surrounding Armenia are very much like the nations surrounding Israel. As the nations surround Israel, so the nations surround Armenia. As the nations surround the Jews, so the nations surround the Christians. And that's why Jesus said, and the Apostle Paul reiterated, that all who live godly in Christ Jesus will suffer persecution. The nations of the earth, including the United States of America, have sought to get the nations to declare that Turkey committed genocide against the Armenians. And to this day, to my knowledge, they have never been able to get the chutzpah to do so. They're afraid of offending the Turks. But that's exactly what the Turks did. Committed genocide. They caused about 1 million to be killed of the Armenians, and almost 2 million to be dispersed, as was Israel, through the face of the earth. how is God going to judge those nations? You see, it is important for us as American Christians perhaps to take more personally and more seriously what is happening with our brethren in Armenia, the first openly declared Christian nation. We need not bow down to them, but we should recognize that they have endured through many dangers, toils, and snares they have already come. 'Tis grace that brought them safe thus far, and grace will lead them home. But what is grace? Grace is not God's willingness to overlook our sin. It's his enabling power to enable us to be victorious over sin so that we can obey his voice. That's what it is. We've misinterpreted grace so much, we turned it into disgrace. God wants to empower you and me to do his will, to obey his voice. Just as Jesus obeyed the Father's voice, he said, I don't do anything I don't see the Father do. I don't say anything I don't hear him say. And as the Father sent me, even so now I send you. Interesting, isn't it? So God wants us to live lives of holiness and righteousness. Now, we might be an Odar with respect to the Armenian people, that is, a stranger to them. But if indeed we are linked by the blood of Christ, then we're no strangers. Because in Jesus Christ, there is neither Jew nor Greek, male nor female, American nor Armenian, but we become one. So I would urge you to pray for the church in Armenia. Yes, there's a great deal of liturgy. Maybe they don't practice exactly the way you and I would. But one thing's for certain. They have remained, in large measure, faithful to the cause of Christ. And that's what you and I want in our own lives, isn't it? And in America, we're not doing a very good job of it. So who's doing the better job, America or Armenia? In Armenia, they've endured since 301 or 303 AD. In America, we have not done that good of a job enduring since, well, 1620, 1630 AD, or 1776 AD, or 1798 AD. Are you beginning to get the point? Maybe, just maybe, here in the U.S., as much as we're grateful for all of the liberties and freedoms and blessings that we have enjoyed, maybe, just maybe, we just ain't as great as we think we are. Maybe we need to humble ourselves before the Lord of history and to come clean with him so that the ark of his covenant through Jesus Christ will rest in the temple mount of our hearts. Not on Mount Ararat, not on the Temple Mount, but in our hearts, and he will find us righteous in our generation. Hope this has been somewhat helpful, informative, yes, transformative, hopefully. Thanks for joining us and become a partner. God bless.
You've been listening to Viewpoint with Chuck Chrismeyer. Viewpoint is supported by the faithful gifts of our listeners. Let me urge you to become a partner with Chuck as a voice to the church declaring vision for the nation. Join us again next time on Viewpoint as we confront the issues of America's heart and home.